Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
To an emerging forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Welcome, everyone, to another Sunday evening and another Emerging Forest episode. And this happens to be the last day of September, September 30th, 2018. The year is just moving right along. And this week's program, I'm honored to have as a guest Jay Lustig, and he's going to talk about his new website and some things in his background. I'd like to thank very much my good friend and friend of the show, Laurie Cagno, for introducing the two of us. Hi, Jay. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good. So there's always sort of a, well, what came first? And, well, for you, journalism came first. So why don't you talk about your background at sort of to set the stage for what we're really talking about in this program.
Sure. I became a journalist, I guess about 35 years ago now, and kind of gravitated towards the arts and feature side of journalism. After working at a daily newspaper in Bergen County, New Jersey, a bi-weekly paper, actually. I got a job at a weekly music newspaper called the East Coast Rocker, which is now known as the Aquarian Weekly. That's a long-running, it actually started as an underground newspaper in the 60s. It's one of the few underground newspapers that is still going from the 60s. Mm. Could actually be the only one, although it's changed form and now it's a purely music newspaper. It's still going as the Aquarian Weekly. Anyway, after a few years there, I moved to the Star Ledger, which was and still is the biggest daily newspaper in New Jersey. Became a music critic, was the music critic there, writing about popular music for 21 years. Then I became an arts editor there, became the arts and entertainment editor, did that for a few years. And then basically, you know, as with pretty much all newspapers in this day and age, you know, they're all shrinking because no one reads newspapers anymore. So, you know, I started my own website, which I've been doing for the last 4 years. It's called njarts.net, and the basic idea is it gives you one place where you can find out all about the arts in New Jersey, you know, what shows are coming up, even reviews, interviews, basically everything you would need to know if you're interested in any form of arts in New Jersey. So that's what I've mainly been doing for the last 4 years. We have a benefit concert coming up October 6th at a place called Tierney's Tavern in Montclair, which is where the town where I happen to live. And it's a it should be a great show. There's a band called the Bongos who were certainly one of the leading bands when Hoboken became a big town for rock and roll in the 80s. And two of their members are going to perform together, a guy named Richard Barone and a guy named James Mastro. Both of them have been, you know, really well known to New Jersey rock audiences. They've been involved in a lot of different things over the years. Glenn Mercer, who was in a very important band called the Feelies, is going to play with his own Glenn Mercer band, and a band called Elk City is going to open, and they're also going to perform with Barone and Mastro. They're going to back them on a few songs. So it should be a great show. Best way to order tickets for anyone who would want to is go to the website outpostintheburbs.org. Outpost in the Burbs is a has a concert series in Montclair, kind of a folk, you know, and rock also oriented concert series, and they also do all kinds of community outreach and stuff. And you know, I write about their stuff a lot, and I'm very friendly with them. And they're a co-sponsor of this concert, so if you go there, and you'll see a blurb for the benefit right there, and you can click on that if you're interested in tickets. So that's outpostintheburbs.org.
So I'd like to take a little piece of what you were talking about. So you've seen with the advent, I mean, back in the day when you first started as a journalist, there wasn't, there might have been some small computer or electronic platform carrying something, or maybe not even carrying anything at all. So what you're saying is you've seen electronic media basically take over the broadcast scene, and you just looked at it and said, well, what I used to do isn't going to get done unless I go out there and make it happen. So that's kind of what you did. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's a lot of what you said. The whole computer revolution. When I started in journalism, which was the mid-80s, computers were coming in from kind of the production side. In other words, people before the mid-80s, people would use typewriters to write their stories, and then there was a whole process where the stories would get edited and then set in type, and it was a very intense labor-intense process to get people's writings into newspaper form every day. Around the time that I started in the mid-80s, you know, the computers changed everything. So now people were using word processors to write their stories, and the production was all starting to get computerized. So that really revolutionized newspapers in a lot of ways. But then what happens, no one in the media really saw this coming. Or they thought it was coming, but they thought it would take decades and decades. It really only took a few years, but after everyone, you know, started getting personal computers, and then a little after that, you know, started getting cell phones and so on, people stopped wanting to read newspapers, and you know, especially younger people who are growing up with computers and cell phones and now iPads and all these different devices, you know, a newspaper seems very archaic to them. Now, the thing about newspapers from a journalism standpoint, from a business standpoint, is they were very lucrative. You know, they really had a monopoly. You know, if you wanted to reach a lot of people in a particular geographic area, the best way was newspapers. Also, the classified ads were very lucrative. And then, you know, you had Craigslist coming in and, you know, seemingly overnight, all that money that newspapers were getting for classified were gone because everyone just simply did them on Craigslist, and it was cheaper. It was you know, perfectly effective way to sell whatever you want, and fewer people were reading newspapers too, so you didn't want to be in the newspapers as much. So anyway, all these things combined have put newspapers into a kind of spiral in which they have less money coming in, so they're firing people left and right, and they're giving people worse newspapers. So then, and that starts to spiral. So, okay, people are getting worse papers, then they become even more likely to cancel their subscriptions. Then the newspapers have even less money to pay their journalists, so more journalists get fired. So anyway, it's most of the media. There are a few newspapers that have, you know, kind of strong national identities and lots of financial backing, places like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they, you know, very, very few others. I guess the Wall Street Journal would be one, which offers a very specialized kind of coverage. But papers like the Star Ledger, which as I said, was and is the biggest daily newspaper in New Jersey, just are finding their readership evaporating. So, you know, I, as with a lot of journalists, I got I wasn't fired, but I was, you know, asked to work for a lot less money, you know, if I wanted to stay there, and to do a job I really didn't want to do. You know, this was in the middle of just a massive reorganization there, so I decided the time was right to, since everything was going online anyway, to kind of create my own website, which I saw a need for because newspapers' coverage of the arts was shrinking. I mean, generally, you know, newspapers, the first thing to get cut is the arts coverage because that's seen as extraneous and it's not serious and it's not really the bread and butter of the paper. It's kind of a nice bonus for people who are interested in the arts, but, you know, it's not really seen as essential usually by upper management at paper. So that's kind of the first thing to go, and the place that is cut most drastically at a lot of papers. So, you know, as I said, you know, that I felt it was really the only thing I could do was try to create my own and, you know, give people that kind of coverage, but in a purely online way.
So to give our listeners an overview, I mean, when I think of arts, certainly there's music and certainly there's the gamut of music, but then there's theater, there's museums, and so what is the content, what is the bandwidth that you present in your website?
I'm not sure how to answer the bandwidth question, but what we do, you know, as I said, we try to cover all the arts, and so that would be music, as you said, theater, film, family entertainment, dance, comedy, and visual arts. Now, partially because my background is in music, and also because music to do better, you know, get a better response than a lot of other art forms on the internet. My website is, I would say, probably about 75% music. But we also do a lot of theater and do a little of all the other things. We have listings for everything. Certainly the majority of the actual posts, the articles, are music-oriented. That's really our bread and butter.
Okay. So we do have four songs. We do have four songs here to play. And so from my perspective, I'd like to scatter them through the show. Does that seem reasonable to you?
Yeah, absolutely, sure.
Okay, so do you want to, you know the playlist better than I do. Is there one song that you would rather hear first?
It doesn't really matter, but why don't you play Flew a Falcon first, and I'll talk a little about that.
Okay, so do you want to introduce it, or do you want to talk after it?
Yeah, no, let me just introduce it a little. As I said, we're doing a benefit for the website, which the musicians were very nice to take, you know, volunteer or you know, say yes if asked to take part in. And the headliners are Richard Barone and James Mastro, who were in a group called the Bongos together, but they also made an album together, released under their duo name, just Richard Barone and James Mastro, in 1983, I believe. It was called Nuts and Bolts, and it's a pretty obscure album because they were really putting more attention into the group, the Bongos, at the time. But they're going to play a bunch of songs from it at the concert, which should be interesting for fans of those. So the songs I gave you are four songs from that album. Flew a Falcon is one that probably most fans of Richard Barone would recognize because he continued to form that in his solo career after the Bongos broke up. So that's a song that had a future. Most of the stuff on that Nuts and Bolts album never really got played very much live after the album release. So Flew a Falcon was probably the one that most people would know. So why don't we start with that?
Okay, that's great. So here is Flew a Falcon.
I flew a falcon, I flew a thunderbird, I flew everything away. There was a pasture, someone was chanting, I couldn't listen anyway. And in the future, if there is time left, then I will show you how I feel. Too many scared guys, too many scared guys, I wanna kiss you but I'll go away. Let me go away. Let me go away.
Yeah, that's an interesting song. Very catchy.
Very catchy. I think also one of the things about Richard Burns' lyric writing, the meanings of the songs are somewhat elusive. I mean, it sounds like he's like. Was like telling some kind of mythical story, but it's not really clear what the action is. You know, it's all these kind of very vivid images, and you know, the listener kind of has to put it together in a way that makes sense to the listener. He's not telling a story per se. It's almost like, you know, this series of images that adds up to something, but it's going to add up something different for every listener.
Yeah, that's sort of the right way to do it. Let the audience make their own input.
Well, that's one style of songwriting, and he, you know, he has kind of more straightforward songs too. But I think that's something he does very well, and that's something. The Bongos were kind of known for is that they, you know, these kinds of songs with very elliptical meanings, you know.
So because you were involved,
bands have done, you know, it's not unique to them, yeah.
So you were involved in pulp paper newspapers through sort of. As you said, the background aid of computers, because most people don't understand that, as you were saying, everything was typed on typewriters, and then the stories were edited by an editor up in the, you know, on the mezzanine, and then the story basically words were lost because it had to fit on a certain size page, and then it was actually set in metal type, and then a rubber page was actually made as the printing form, and that rubber page was actually sort of the echo or the male or the female of that type, and so each singular page of the newspaper was actually this big rubber mat that got printed. All the pages got printed from that, and it went onto a big roller, and all the sheets of the newspaper were printed off of that roller.
That's like
ergo Henry Ford type of assembly line. You know, people there, you know, basically grunting and groaning. Because it was a heavy physical labor, job. I mean, you know, people typing, and then, you know, then someone else, you know, quite the muscular set of people were actually there, you know, making this whole process happen. And then the newspaper got printed, and it went on trucks, and it got delivered, and. Now, when you think about the process, the story gets typed on a PC on a keyboard, and it doesn't have to fit into any format. So there's probably much less editing going on, and it's also become so much more independent because. At that time, the only person who could reach an audience, or the only mode that could reach that audience, was actually the printed newspaper, where now anybody can write a blog, or anybody can make a video and put it on YouTube and attract an audience. So the clarions, or the big voices, are, you know, there's a lot of them that are still out there, but as you said, a lot of them are gone, and a lot of them are dead. And so njarts.net has basically, you looked at the world and you said, okay, I'm the guy who's been doing this, and if I don't get out there and make njarts.net happen, there isn't another person who is me who's going to make this happen. It's going to just fall flat on the floor. So I'm wondering, I mean, okay, you sort of motivated where the money came from from newspapers. It came from ads and classifieds, and they basically split it up and said, okay, you get this piece of the pie and you get that piece of the pie. So how did this all come, you know, financially? How does this site work for you?
I'd be glad to answer that. I will in a second. I just want to go back for a second to the technical thing you were talking about with the hot type era of newspapers, which you described very well. But that actually ended a little before I got into the industry. And when I started, it's kind of an intermediate phase called the paste up. You know, the method was called paste up, and basically what that was you would use word processors to generate these stories, and then they would be printed on these pieces of paper that were then glued onto a large board, and each board was a page of the newspaper, and then they could be edited right on that board, and then when they were finished being, or preferably they would be edited in advance, but often they would be cut to fit on the board, and then those boards would be photographed and sent to some place where they were then transformed, you know, where they would then get printed out as a newspaper. So it was kind of an intermediate phase between the hot type era and the computer era, this paste-up era where things were printed out and then photographed. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But to answer your question, there are several ways a site like mine makes money, and it doesn't make a ton of money, believe me. But the primary way is advertisements. We go out to the, and I work with an advertising and marketing director. Her name is Cindy Stagoff, and she goes out to the arts organizations in New Jersey, the theaters, you know, the larger theaters for the most part, the places that plays and you know, the performing arts centers mostly, but also some museums, you know, we've gotten occasionally ads from bands, from people who are, you know, from concert producers, but mainly it's the performing arts centers and the larger theaters in the state. And they advertise to be on the website and on our newsletter that goes out. And that's where most of the money comes in. We also, we're not a tax-exempt charitable organization, but we do ask people, you know, when we don't make people pay to get our information, but we do ask that they give us some money if they like what we're doing. And a lot of people, you know, have done that. And, you know, again, it's not a huge amount of money, but it does bring some money in. And then there are things like, you know, these benefit concerts we do, which this will be our fourth, I believe, fourth. And, you know, they make us some money too. So it's a variety of ways, but primarily it's advertising. You know, it's since, you know, we've grown steadily in the 4 years since I started it, but still are not making a huge amount of money. It's really a struggle to try to keep going.
Okay, well, we'll take it up there after the break. Hey, everybody,
okay.
It's Dave the Bard. It's Dave the Bard, Howl and Toe.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born. Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too. Howl and Toe, Johnny Rumble-o. Feather goose, we shall eat the roast. Oh, Howl and Toe, Johnny Rumble-o. We were up long before the day old to welcome in the summertime, welcome in the May old. For summer is a coming in and winter's gone away.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And Jay, so we were talking during the break, and what I wanted to get into and talk about first is the website njarts.net has a ring, has a purpose, has a need. The artists feel that it fills a need for them. Because otherwise they wouldn't be coming out and supporting this concert, right? Or you wouldn't have had four concerts, because there wouldn't be a utility. I mean, if NJ Arts just didn't do anything for them, they wouldn't be coming out, and they've been coming out for 4 years. So do you want to talk about that relationship?
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, these are people in a lot of cases that I've known for many years. In other words, I wrote about them when I was at the Star Ledger, and in some cases I even wrote about them before that when I was at the Aquarian Weekly or the East Coast Rockers it was in those days. So, you know, so these are people I've you know, known for a long time, and they like what I'm doing, hopefully. But basically, you know, artists are starving to kind of get their, and artists of all kinds, you know, musicians, theater artists, visual artists, whoever, they need to get to make people aware of what they're doing, and it really behooves them to be supportive of media efforts that are going to help them do that, because, you know, increasingly they're not going to get that from the newspapers, just because, you know, there's no one left at the newspapers, and the newspapers, you know, have become in a lot of ways very focused on drawing, you know, big numbers to their websites. You know, they've all become, you know, the phrase is, you know, web first. So whereas you used to have when website started, you would have newspapers basically taking their content and putting it online. Now it's really the other way around. The primary effort is going into the website, and then a small group of people are taking what's on the website and kind of making a newspaper out of that. And websites make money by attracting a lot of people. So there's great pressure on journalists these days, and in a lot of cases they get paid bonuses based on how many people their articles or photographs draw. So everything is becoming very much focused on things that'll get the most hits online. And In the area of entertainment, that generally translates to celebrity kind of stuff and television kind of stuff. And so the smaller kind of grassroots things are getting much less exposure in newspapers and in the newspapers' websites. So a lot of people realize, I wish more people realized, but a lot of people do already, that their future as artists, it's really vital for them that these small startup web companies that are saying, you know, we're not going to chase, you know, the Kim Kardashian stories to get huge numbers like that. You know, we're going to cover things that are going on in these local theaters and you know, local musicians, knowing that there's a small audience there, but that we can hopefully kind of create a niche that will be enough to sustain us. It's called, the term for that is hyperlocal, and which is usually applied to websites that focus on small communities. Like there's a town in New Jersey called Morristown, and there's a There's a website there run by one of my former colleagues at the Star Ledger, a guy named Kevin Coughlin. It's called MarsTownGreen.com, and there he just does stuff going on in Marstown. And, you know, he's been able to kind of create a business on that model. There are other papers like that. So I'm kind of hyper-local, except it's not a geographic area that I'm covering, but it's a you know, field of endeavor. It's the arts. So my geographic area is all of New Jersey, but only insofar as, you know, arts activities in you know, wherever it's going on in New Jersey. So what was the question?
It's very interesting. I was taking in what you were saying. It's very interesting to have talked in the first segment about the history of newspapers and the history of broadcast, and to have seen the money coming in for all the various ads and classifieds, et cetera, et cetera. And at that point, the newspaper, the quote-unquote, the organism called a newspaper, felt a need to have a section called arts and entertainment. And now, and those larger newspapers may or may not have covered the local bands. And as you said, there were smaller local music papers that did cover the local bands. But now, there's much less of that. And there's almost no coverage. So the local artists, it's in the local artists. The local artist doesn't have a broadcast voice to let people know that they exist. It's like chicken and the egg. Which came first, the local scene or the njarts.net? And it's sort of, you have to exist so that they can exist. So that's the relationship.
Right, yeah. Hopefully it's a kind of symbiotic relationship that they, and as I said, a lot, you know, the art community has been very supportive. The art community has been very supportive. But, you know, there's still a long way to go, and it's tough way to make a living.
Oh, I totally get it. I mean, it's basically, you know, this computer revolution happened, and a lot of pieces just got dropped on the floor, and people are looking around going like, oh, wait a minute, this revolution happened, and my arts and entertainment section got like left in the washer, and all these functions that used to happen automatically. It's like that whole section of society, that whole vibe sort of is a casualty. And you basically looked at it when you got when they asked you to downsize and said, no, I'm gonna perpetuate the voice over here.
Yeah, and you know, it's something that of course the musicians are feeling this in another way, because you know, it used to be that, you know, if you created a piece of music that got popular, you would be financially reimbursed from that. Or sometimes the record companies would steal all your money, but that's another story, or your manager or whatever. But basically there was money coming in, you know, for stuff that became popular. And now everything gets shared online, and very, very little money makes its way back to the musicians, so they're all dealing with trying to reinvent themselves because you know, there's no money coming in that way. So the predominant thought is, you know, a lot of musicians are becoming more oriented towards touring a lot and selling merchandise at their shows and not counting on record sales. In fact, you know, they're in the same way that the newspaper kind of whole Pulaski got flipped. You know, musicians used to go on tour to promote their records. Now they release records to promote their shows. So, you know, and then, you know,
or
theaters.
They,
I was just going to say, and theaters are dealing with the fact that now, you know, you get so many entertainment options at home, you know, that people don't want to go out. So, you know, I go to a lot of theater, you know, plays and musicals, and it's, you know, it's older crowds for the most part. It's people who are, who grew up with this and, you know, are used to this and kind of see this as vital. And, you know, younger people are staying home and watching Netflix and playing video games and all these other wonderful things that exist, but it's really taken a big, impact on the whole world of live entertainment. You know, music too, for that matter.
Wow. But I mean, it's. I mean, from my perspective, the live show is so much better because you're there with people, with live people performing the music. It's a completely different animal.
Yeah, no, it is. It's so much easier than, you know, getting your pajamas and turn on Netflix. Because, you know, you have 1,000 options there, things that you might find entertaining. And it's just, you know, used to have to go to a concert to experience the band. I mean, you wouldn't. When I started going to concerts in, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, before MTV, you know, you would go to a concert, and that would be your first time seeing the band in flesh. You know, you didn't know what they looked like, really, except for maybe sometimes like an album cover or something. But, you know, now it's the concert kind of, you know, became, especially when MTV was popular, then the concerts all became like kind of reenactments of the video, which was kind of a bizarre twist. But, yeah, the people, I think people are not going to live events as routinely, and that's part of the thinking of the site too, you know, just kind of make people aware of all this stuff and all these things going on in little communities that you can't keep up on everything, but you can go to this site and explore, you know, what's out there. I'll do the looking for you and kind of tell you what's the best of what's out there. And you can save some time doing that and learn about some stuff that you'd probably be interested in, but, you know,
right,
you just have no way about it. You know, you can't subscribe to every mailing list and every Facebook group, but, you know, I can do that as a profession and consolidate all that information and deliver it to you. That's the thinking, at least.
Right, I understand. So, which song should I play next? And do you want to set it up?
Sure. Well, one of the interesting things about this album is that, as I said, you know, it was released by these two guys, Richard Barone and James Mastro, and, you know, side one was Barone's songs, you know, stuff he wrote and sang, and side two was James Mastro's stuff he wrote and sang, which is an unusual way to do an album. And they, you know, they both worked on all the songs together, but, you know, one took the lead on one side and one took the lead on the other. So since we did a Richard Barone song before, why don't we do a James Mastro song? No One Has to Know is a song that I just really happen to like a lot. So why don't you play that one?
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
There it is. No One Has to Know. No One Has to Know.
The rain, the
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, it's a really pretty song.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, if I can just mention again, I mean, we're doing this benefit at Tierney Tavern in Montclair. You can order tickets, outpostintheverb.org. Very rare opportunity to see these guys together who, you know, are very, you know, a lot of people in New Jersey I know really like them a lot. It's going to be a unique night. Should be really great.
Yeah. So, do you want to play both of the songs, or do you just want to play one to end the show?
Yeah, no, I'd be fine playing both. You have one more each, one from Mastro and one from Barone. The Barone one is I've Got a Secret, which is a very catchy song, probably the catchiest song on the album. And the Mastro song, I believe I gave you. Which one did I give you?
Angel in My Pocket.
Yeah, right. Yeah, which is just another really nice song. So yeah, it's great if you could play one more each from each of them, and I really thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Well, I mean, we'll talk after I play the songs. So okay. Here's the secret.
Okay, I've got a secret.
And our last selection is Angel in My Pocket, and here's that.
Angel in My Pocket.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the more sonically adventurous songs on the album.
Yeah, interesting. So, to summarize what we've talked about, I mean, we've talked about sort of the forgotten pages of the newspaper and how they continue on into this new and exciting change of form. And it's sort of interesting that the show that you're on is called An Emerging Forest, because there were some leaves of the quote-unquote newspaper on a particular branch that flourished and functioned in a certain way, and then they got pruned and fell to the ground, and they're re-emerging in trying to stumble and find their way forward, because they certainly are needed in society.
Well, thank you. That's a beautiful way to put it. Wow.
So the benefit concert for NJArts.net takes place at Tierney's Tavern in Montclair on October the 6th. And would you give the website for tickets again?
Sure. The best. Well, my website is NJArts.net, but this concert is being co-sponsored by the Outpost and the Burbs organization. So the easiest way to get tickets would be to go to outpostsandtheburbs.org and you'll see a big picture on the right-hand side of the page there, and just click on that, and it'll take you to where you can buy tickets. There's a place you can buy tickets.
Okay, so that's
that's
all the words, outpostsandtheburbs.org, right?
Burbs, yeah. Yep.
Okay. So, Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Larry Cagno, for introducing me to Jay. Thank you, Jay, for being on the show tonight. And it's always very interesting to connect with new people and to support your efforts. You're very, very much at home with on an emerging forest, because we're always think we don't know where we're going, but we kind of know where we're going, and we're stumbling forward, keeping certain things that are near and dear to our heart alive.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate it. I thanks for having me, and it's a great service for you to help people get word out about things like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll connect with you after the show on Messenger and tell you what happens next. And thank you for being on the show. Hey, everyone, my name is Alan Ritter. I can be contacted at RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com if you want to be on this show, or if you want to hear about my produce business in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area, which is called the Produce Club. It has its own website, produceclub.us. But you can just drop me a line, say, hey, what's going on here? How can I get organic produce for a lot less than Whole Foods and other groceries charge? So thank you once again, Jay, and have a great week, and your week is basically going to be getting ready for your benefit, which I believe is going to be next weekend, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. So, it doesn't really take, thankfully I have someone helping me with it, a woman named Cindy Stagoff, so she's really doing most of the work. But yes, it's a big project.
All right, so I'll connect with you right after the show, Jay. Hey, everyone, if you're in the Montclair area or if you're interested in these performers, as Jay said, it might be a never for them being together again, or being together in this type of atmosphere with the freedom to express themselves, as they're going to do this coming Saturday night. So why don't you
go to outpostintheburbs.org and buy some tickets and support the musicians and support njarts.net. Have a great night. Have a great week. Thank you, Jay, for being on the show.
Great. Thank you very much again. Thanks.
All right. All right.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.